You are listening to the Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 11-1. I'm your big, bad, lovable host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me, not so big, just as bad, and oh, so lovable, is Sean Nola Kirkland.
Everybody loves us. They're able to.
And love is a word I'd use to describe my other co-host's appreciation for Sailor Moon. I've already introduced Eric Blue Swim.
Hey, that's me! And I'm going to be getting older pretty soon. Damn it.
With us tonight is Jeremy, Lawman Lamont. Jeremy, tell me about love.
Love is all you need.
Okay, Mr. Beetle.
That's it. I mean, that's it. That's all I have to say. Love is all you need.
Now, I've heard love stinks. Yeah.
Love is a battlefield.
I love me some games that Deagle's been playing.
Well, before we get to that.
Desperate for that transition.
Regretfully, Sage Samurage Morris Green is not here tonight due to a rehearsal. Sean, what role is she trying out for?
Apparently not a lawyer.
Is she Brutus in Julius Caesar stuff? Or Jean Valjean in Les Mis?
She's Phoenix Wright in the Rule 63 rendition of Phoenix Wright, the musical.
She's a shoo-in. Okay. So, yes. First up, I want to give a big shout out to Howard Sow of Muse Games, who came over today. He demoed a game called Guns of Icarus. It's a free-to-play game which received a Kickstart injection recently, and Howard demonstrated that the money wasn't squandered away. So basically, what you have is a little bit like Team Fortress with these fighting blimps, and instead of players kind of sticking to the fixed roles of soldier, spy or medic, you have the opportunity to switch between captain, where you steer the big ship, gunner, you know, use a variety of cannons mounted to the side of each ship, and then an engineer, which of course you bang the shit out of stuff with a big wrench to fix things. So right now the game's in pre-alpha, visually, sonically, it's a little rough around the edges, but
Sorry. I remember seeing this a long time ago, and it's come a long way.
Yeah. Within minutes, I was actually having a good time with it. The premise puts players in this kind of diesel punk, steampunk world where a number of ships set sail. Each of these craft is on this continuum that balances, you know, like speed, power, weapon bays, durability, you know, and the like. And once you set sail, I think there are about four players on each ship. And so one of the things that he communicated is that in-game chat or text chat is pretty much vital to being successful in the game. So a few things I found interesting is first, enemies and friendlies, they kind of looked alike to me. There wasn't a clear visual distinction between the two. But smartly, you could mark enemies, which put this kind of white border around the ship. And if you were marked yourself, you could kind of go into the clouds and lose that designator. So, you know, it had this great kind of voluminous clouds. Ship damage is component-based. So you can plug away at, I don't know, things like engines, the top part of the blimp, whatever, you know, keeps it airborne, rotors, guns, you know, what have you, which is kind of cool. So you could leave people, you know, stranded out there and just plug away at them. So looks cool. And we'll probably have an interview with Howard later. So looks kind of promising and, you know, want to wish them the best of luck. Next up is a little bit of Rainbow Moon. No blue.
Somebody say moon.
Yeah, the moon. This moon weighs in about, 1.6 gigabytes.
That's no moon. It's a space station.
Oh, you got me on that one. So it's nice looking. It's pretty story deficient. It's a strategy role-playing game.
You said story deficient?
Yes. Forged to offer about 100 hours of gameplay. And I think it's one of the rare DLC titles that offers a platinum trophy. Sean, I'm sure you can tell me the others.
Not off the top of my head.
Are there many?
By DLC, you mean that it's downloadable or that there's a shit ton of DLC that's available
Actually, both of those are true. One of the things I saw already, for those people that do purchase it, you get 500 free what are called rainbow coins. That's kind of the in-game currency, which I haven't put a lot of time, but that's my stickling point. But let me kind of just touch on how simple the story is. It's pretty skeletal. You play Baldrin, and he's this protagonist who's fighting with this enemy. And then the guy throws him through this warp porthole, which basically gives him a one-way ticket to this, you know, really charming, lush world. And unfortunately, the villain, he also clogged this warp pipe like a third-world toilet, and he filled it with all kinds of monsters there. So since Baldrin's a good guy, he agrees to clean up all the damage. So that basically involves you run around the overworld map, eliminating monsters, and then there's the occasional random battle. There are, what I've heard, about 20 dungeons as well. And combat, I thought it was going to be a little bit more in the Disgaea camp. It's actually a little bit more of a roguelike, and later you control multiple people. And by that, it's really simplified. Instead of kind of choosing your unit, picking, you know, you see the grid where you want to go, then you pick a spot, attack. Instead, there's kind of a scrolling menu where you select move, attack, defend, item, you know, all those things. And then you move the stick in the appropriate direction. And much like ZHP, every once in a while, or at the beginning of it, I kind of had a hard time getting the direction because it is presented in an isometric view. So every once in a while, I'd kind of miss out, and that would frustrate me because then give the monster.
That was like a lot of the old PS1 strategy games where it was hard to tell which. They would either make it so you have to hit the diagonal to move a space, which is always awkward, or left would be like up and left or down and left. Right would be up and right, and you just have to remember that all the time, and it's weird.
Instinctive, but then if you put it down and come back to it, and it's like, what the hell, where am I going? So,
but in combat, they give you little markers, though, so you can see, like, don't they show, like, a ghost of a D-pad, so you can see, like, this is the right, this is the left?
It goes from blue to orange, but actually nailing those diagonals every once in a while, I was missing at the beginning. Of course, you know, like Sean said, you get used to it, you know, after a little while.
Do you lose moves?
I'm sorry?
If you make a mistake, do you lose the movement point, or?
Yeah, you do. And so
that's brutal.
You don't confirm that. You know, it's just you basically have, you know, four different, you know, the cardinal directions depending on the environment. You pick one and then the monster, you know, it's their turn. Later on, you get multiple moves, which is kind of cool. So one of the things is basically you try to get the monster in position so that you have the first attack. And then later, once you grow a party, you want the last attack or last attack accordingly, because whoever lands kind of sends a creature to their grave gets rewarded in what are called rainbow pearls. And the rainbow pearls are kind of the currency to power up. You know, four pearls at the beginning gives you a little bit more strength or vitality. And then there's also rainbow coins, like I mentioned, which are used to buy the weapons, the armor, you know, your things like that. So far it's a little bit simple. I am playing on the normal difficulty. There is a hard difficulty that I plan to check out before I write the review. But I'm enjoying it, just not as much as I would like. And maybe I have to temper my expectations because I am a, you know, strategy RPG fan, and maybe I'm comparing it to that other game a little bit. Which I won't for sure. Sanity.
Maybe, you know, it's sort of with a lot of penguins that go, dude.
I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's talking about. And the last thing I want to talk about is NCAA Football 13. I just got in today, only played about three games and part of the Heisman Challenge, so I won't spend too much time on it. And one of the niggling complaints about NCAA is that you're not controlling actual college players. You only have these kind of broad approximations of a school's defensive, offensive capabilities, and then, you know, their playbook. And the Heisman Challenge brings in, you know, former and current, especially if you pre-order from GameStop where you get three extra players. So former and current NFL stars. And there you have a single season to meet certain goals. So in 2002, Carson Palmer, I think he racked up like 33 passing touchdowns and 4 rushing touchdowns for USC, and that I'm trying to beat right now. And what's strange is that you can have Palmer play for USC, but you can also throw him, you know, on the Stanford or UCLA squad. The big change of this mode is this reaction time that's a little arcadey, kind of reminds me of something from the old Blitz or Jam, you know, type of games, where if you hold the L2 button, time slows down, and that's a resource that you earn by, you know, first downs, touchdowns, and leading your team to victory. So,
and this is a simulation?
Yeah, it's well, simulation / kind of career. And I guess what it does is simulate, you know, the whole effect of adrenaline. Like when adrenaline's pumping in your body, you have that sensation that things are kind of slowing down around you. But this is taken, you know, to the 10th power in that. And the last thing I was going to say, an apology to Sean. And one of the things, I picked up a PSP this week because Gungnir and Unchained Blades, those reviews are available online. I picked up a PSP Go and I just kind of trashed it. And I said, I don't like it. I don't like the volume buttons. I hate it. I think it's fine. And pretty soon I started liking it because
I know, right?
The volume buttons are still kind of a hassle, but it really kind of grew on me. And I dig it now. So
I came danger close to selling my Vita to get a Go back. I'm sitting here holding on to my Vita going, man, I cannot wait till I can play my PS1 games on it. And I'm like, what the fuck? I had this awesome thing that's all I did with it. Why did I get rid of it?
And then the other thing,
why does anybody sell any consoles? I mean, it doesn't make sense because sooner or later there's going to be something that you want coming out for it, or some experience that you can't get on a newer system. Then you'll have to go back and track it down again.
Because some of us are poor, and that's the only way that we can survive.
Vita would have 100% backwards compatibility. We bought into the hype. The other thing I was going to say, Sean, is I got a used one from GameStop because they're $69. This one was in immaculate condition. I mean, it was just super clean. No scratches, nothing. And I bring it home. Not only is there a memory card on there, but the new Monster Hunter with an English patch on there.
wait, Monster Hunter Portable 3rd with an English patch?
Patch, yep. So I was playing a little bit of that.
I hate you so hard. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, that is. It's not all translated. Oh, then the other thing was, what was the one? Grand Knights, the one that... Grand Knight Story. I was playing a little bit of that, and that's got an English patch as well, which is kind of cool.
Locked out.
Monster.
I don't know. I'd say if you didn't get somebody's porn collection and maybe their weed, I think, no good.
So that's what I've been playing more. I'll probably play some Monster Hunter just so I can rub it in Sean's face.
I hate you so much. Portable. There it is.
So, yes, Sean wants to see it. Jeremy.
Yeah, well, I've been, I caught a little bit of Evo fever this past week. So I don't know if anybody else watched that. Are you guys into that sort of thing, fighting games, etc.?
I watched a bit of it, but I got kind of busy and forgot about it.
Yeah,
I mean, thought about watching. Did they have a Virtua Fighter 5 or Virtua Fighter Final Showdown?
I don't know. Nobody plays Virtua Fighter, but I...
what?
So good.
The main Mortal Kombat
is. Yeah. Well, the thing is, I mean, it was going on all weekend. It was like a 3 or 4 day thing, but I just tuned in for the finals, you know, because I mean, that's all anybody cares about. But, you know, watch some King of Fighters. What is it? King of Fighters 13. Amazing. You know, the Koreans are really, they're on a tour de force, man. They got like all the top spots this year. You know, a little bit of Mortal Kombat I got to watch. And of course, Street Fighter. And a lot of that. So I actually have been playing Mortal Kombat on the Vita this past week. In fact, it was on a little bit of a sale. Again, we talked about sales. Unfortunately, at this point, I think most of this stuff is done with. But $10 games recently on the Vita at GameStop. Mortal Kombat was $10. Mod Nation Racers was $10. And I think Blue is going to be talking about something else that was on a sale here this past week as well. But so I've been playing Mortal Kombat, and for me it's a return after probably 20 years. I mean I haven't played a Mortal Kombat game since the Genesis, I think. And that's it. I mean, there's been a lot of games out since then, and people are into the lore, and You know, I don't know. I mean, I know they pull off heads and stuff, so I'm like, oh, I'll try out Mortal Kombat. It's $10. And I have to say, I've really been enjoying it, especially on the Vita. First off, the Vita version comes with, I believe, all of the downloadable characters. Freddy Krueger and Kratos is on there. Just all kinds of people. Who even knows who they all are? Lizard people. I don't know. So those are all included, and the Vita is a really good little platform for it. I mean, I use the Vita D-pad, and you can pull off really most of the moves. There are some touch controls, and I guess there's some kind of gyro functionality. I haven't really been using that. I've just been kind of doing the plain vanilla, just fighting. And the controls are nice and straightforward. I know that a lot of people who play Mortal Kombat, they probably are already familiar with this, but the it's nothing like what I expect the combos to be from things like Street Fighter, where it's, you know, down, right, up, you know, fierce attack, low kick, things like that. I mean, it's mostly the combos are 3-4. I mean, I don't think there's anything that I saw that was more than four steps to do a combo. And so I've actually been kind of successful. I mean, I got up to Shao Kahn and got my ass handed to me, but but I did have fun with it. And I actually played it online also. And I've heard, I haven't played any of the console versions of Mortal Kombat. I guess this is what, Mortal Kombat 9, I think it is, something like that. But the netcode, from what I understand, is actually really good on the Vita and not so much on the consoles. So I decided to try it out. A few other people, you know, obviously have been picking the game up because it was inexpensive. And we tried it out. And we actually tried, I have to say, I tried the Vita Party Chat, which I had only tried once or twice before, but nobody was ever interested to talk to me. So I was sad. But I tried it this time and it worked.
Are you talking
like
about
charm.
Me, Jeremy?
I could be. I may be. I'm referring to some people who may be present, but it works really well, and I'm kind of curious to try it again and see, you know, switching in and out of games, kind of like on the Xbox. I guess I have to assume that it works really well, but it worked great for this. So full voice chat, playing Mortal Kombat with a friend, and the online worked really well. You're able to do repeat matches and select characters and all that. It was a really, really good experience. Aside from that, I wanted to mention the story mode, and again, I had mentioned the lore a little bit earlier, and I know there's this story, and it's been developing over the course of, you know, Mortal Kombat Shaolin monks, and Sub-Zero has his thing, and, you know, I don't know. To me, though, I actually ended up really kind of enjoying it. The game, if you play through the story mode, there's actually like kind of like a big, long, extended cutscene, I guess you might say. I mean, I guess I haven't done the whole thing, but I assume the entire story mode goes through all of these characters, and it just kind of weaves in and out of these pairings of fights. And it's a little bit kind of ludicrous, you know, the story. I mean, it's kind of like something that a 12-year-old might have written, but, you know, like, oh, wait, don't fight him. I am Raiden, the Thunder God. Oh, yes, well, I'll fight you. And then and then you have to fight Raiden or something like that, or, you know, oh, this fight is not for you. We must protect Earthrealm from Shao Kahn and the F you, I'm a lizard. We'll fight now.
Isn't this also a reboot kind of thing? Like a canon reboot where they have to reboot the entire universe and do everything over again indefinitely?
It sort of feels like it. I mean, I hadn't, you know, like I said, I didn't know the lore before, but they really are like, oh, well, I'm Johnny Cage and I'm a movie star and, you know, mm-hmm. I'm a kind of an asshole. And so I have been kind of learning.
I'll ask
a little...
Sony out for a date when she says no, I'll beat her ass.
Yeah, exactly. That wasn't that kind of weird. Like that was almost literally the scenario. Like, no. And then she like pushes him or something and it's like, okay, fight. And then you like, you know, break her spine or something. I mean, they have these
that's
extra
fucked up.
Yeah,
oh,
it's
Daniel Tosh.
It was. Yeah, exactly. So it's Mortal Kombat piling in on the social injustice video game bandwagon. But it was a little weird pulling off the X-ray moves and like crack it. You know, you see the skull crack and it's like, okay, I guess I won't date you. So that, I think, is something new to the game. Is that anything that they've done in any previous Mortal Kombat games? I do not know.
The X-rays?
Yeah, the X-ray moves.
No, the X-ray's new.
Weren't they in Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe?
No. I don't think so.
Well, for Superman they were, because he has X-ray vision. So everything is...
No, I think they've been in something else, but I could be wrong.
Well, anyway, on the Vita, and I don't know if those were always difficult moves in the past, but, you know, you build up a meter kind of like pretty much every other fighting game these days, and you just pull down both shoulder buttons, and if you're in range, if you happen to hit, then you get this, you know, really brutal, you know, x-ray. You see all the guts and things and bones breaking if you stick a knife in someone's leg. But it kind of makes you wonder, though, like, I guess, you know, previously you could kind of imagine, okay, well, he's just taking, you know, hits to the torso or whatever, but now it's like his leg is broken in three places. Shouldn't he be seeking out medical attention now?
How's he able to walk and do like a spin kick? And...
yeah, exactly.
You know, but... what though, this opens the door for time killers.
No. That door is shut and it remains
time
closed.
Killers. Think about it.
Next you're gonna say Primal Rage.
So I, you know, you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt, but it's fun. It's good, stupid fun, and I usually don't, you know, really, really enjoy good, stupid fun. But Mortal Kombat is pretty good. Wait for it to go on a sale again if you're not sure. But for me, somebody who hadn't been with that series pretty much since, you know, I mean, I played the first game and now this.
You know what my favorite metagame of the Vita version is?
What's that?
To look at the faces, because the facers don't use too many polygons, and say, what actor does that look like?
You know, I have heard that in the console version, because like I said, the fights sort of intersperse with this long cutscene, and you can, I mean, it's not seamless. There's no loading, so that part of it is really good. Like, it just suddenly the camera pans, and now you're in a fight, which is kind of cool. But there's definitely a difference between the poly count in the, you know, the actual game versus what's in the cutscenes. And I've heard that the console version does a better job of making that less jarring. But all in all, like I said, if you understand that you're on a portable, the play itself, the actual fighting is really good, and I've really been enjoying it. So I definitely can recommend it at $10 if that is available to you. So,
and where else could Wilford Brimley fight?
Diabetes.
I have diabetes. That's right.
Did you guys ever see the John Goodman SNL skit where he's talking about rolling off of a horse and onto a smaller horse, then onto a large dog, until I can just roll to the ground?
Sounds familiar.
Sounds like Katamari.
Yeah. Katamari. Speaking of Katamari, I had used a little Katamari metaphor earlier this week about the critical darlings of this year. The other games that I've been playing recently, Spelunky for the Xbox 360, which is a kind of a remake or a spiritual successor to Spelunker,
which I love.
And which Sean is a big fan of, but Spelunky didn't really do it for me. And I started thinking about this because right before Spelunky, I'd been playing Fez. You know, I talked about that on the show. And to be honest with you, although it had this sort of charm, I didn't really stick with Fez either, and I didn't really enjoy Fez that much. And before Fez, it was probably Journey, you know, which I know there are people out there who love their Journey, but Journey didn't really do it for me either. And the thing that's unique, or the thing that's in common, I guess, with all of these things is the critical and popular reception to these things has been really, really positive. And it feels like a Katamari of hype. You know, they talk about the hype train, but I kind of feel like somewhere in the middle, maybe Journey is this kernel of like these critical or indie darlings, and then it just sort of rolls and rolls, and then, you know, Fez is there and it rolls in and everybody's like, yes, Fez is the best thing ever. Oh, Fez, it's so indie, it's so awesome. And then Spelunky comes along, oh, 10 out of 10 forever and all time. And then, you know, and for some, and I don't know if it's just me, I feel
it's not
like,
just you, I'm the same way, don't worry.
I feel like I'm a little bit broken on the inside. Maybe I'm dead, but this year seems like the year of like unrequited hype for me.
Well, you know what I've noticed for me personally is that any game that people seem to just to like before it comes out, it immediately raises red flags with me. And the example I always use, which I guess kind of falls out of your example because it's not really indie, is Final Fantasy 13. Because for years before that game came out, you saw people dressing up in cons as Lightning, and you saw like all this Final Fantasy 13 fan art and all this other stuff. And people already decided that game was worth adding to their little macrocosm. And it bugged me to the point where I don't think it was possible for me to get into that game. And Fez was the same way. Like Fez, there was so much love for Fez before Fez even came out that I mean, I thought Fez had been out for a year when it actually came out. I was like, yeah, I had seen enough Fez at that point to piece it together.
Well, and for me, the weird thing for me in this situation is I'm usually the opposite way. Like, if people are really hating something, because the thing is about Final Fantasy XIII, that by the time it came out, everybody was like, oh, you know, like, it was a stinker. You know, nobody, you know, you're walking down corridors and stuff like that. And for me, like, that really, like, that's blood in the water for me. Like, oh, I want to love that just to spite everybody. And
we should be best friends.
Maybe. I don't know.
You must really love Matt Hazard.
No, I don't actually love Matt Hazard. That is actually terrible. But so the thing is, so I've been playing Spelunky. Let me talk a little bit about Spelunky. But I just have to say I haven't played that much of it because I played it for a couple of nights, maybe 2 or 3 hours, and I feel like maybe if I go back to it, I could do it, but I have to bring myself to it. But Spelunky, of course, is 2D, sort of a platformer. I hate when people say that things are old school these days because it sort of brings to mind things like Fez or, you know, something that's blocky and pixelated. This has some fairly nice art, but it definitely has kind of an old school sort of, you know, very simple jumping, and you can grasp onto ledges and things like that. But then people also say that it has kind of a rogue or a roguelike kind of element to it, which I haven't really... Maybe I'm missing something here, but the thing about Spelunky is that it's very difficult also. It's just that you don't have a lot of abilities. It's not an overpowered hero. You're very underpowered. You can jump on snakes and jump on spiders, and you have a little whip you can use. But the goal is you go through these procedurally generated caverns, which is kind of cool. And they're just these, you know, everything is sort of arranged in blocks. So you have blocks of earth, and there's maybe a ladder that goes up, and, you know, gems are scattered throughout. You might have a little spider or a snake, you go through this level, and you're trying to either rescue a lady. I don't even know the lady's name. I feel bad. Or there's an idol that you can get, and you try and get these to the exit in a certain amount of time before a ghost comes and gets you. So it's very simple in that sense. So old school in the sense that there's not really a lot going on, but there's definitely a lot of playability here, and a lot of people really like it because it is challenging, and it's one of those kind of like Super Meat Boy where, you know, I've heard people say that you don't ever really blame the game, you can only blame yourself, which I can see that to an extent, but also, you know, it's kind of up to me to also decide to love the game, I guess. I'm not really sure. But when you die, you essentially are sent back to the very beginning of a new randomly generated cavern, and you kind of get to do the whole thing all over again. And the thing that I don't get about the roguelike comparison is that you don't get to keep any of your stuff, as far as I can tell. Well, and I guess in Rogue, the thing was that you would keep your character, like your level would continue to increase, but you just wouldn't get your items or whatever. As far as I can tell in this, and maybe I just haven't played it enough, but you go back to the beginning and you pretty much just start over at the beginning.
Can't you jump to the next world?
There is a warping area that, that you can go to. I mean, the environments do change, but I guess I just don't really get much of a feeling like I'm really progressing, which is the thing. Like, I'm not, you know, the thing about Rogue or a roguelike game is that you are sort of clawing your way a little bit of time with what you have left over to you. Mm-hmm. And in this, you're sort of just like starting over. And if you happen to get to another world or another level, you know, you might be able to just jump back to that. But I don't know. I mean, Robert, have you played it? I mean, I guess I'm not.
I played the PC version, and the one question, Jeremy, I wanted to ask you was play Focus Tester for a second. What does the game need for you to enjoy it? Is it the difficulty level? Is it, you know?
I have an answer to this one.
Okay.
Portable. It needs to be portable.
Yeah, that would help a lot.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just have to feel like I'm getting somewhere. I mean, the time that I put into it. I mean, that's the thing, is in Rogue or in roguelike games, you at least part of you, you know, you don't maybe get to keep that awesome weapon that you found or whatever, but you at least have something that is enabling you to go farther every time. And on this, if you end up with a cave that is generated and it's just, you know, it just sucks and you know, the hit detection is, I don't want to call it hit detection, but for example, you can be hit by one thing and then go flying off and get hit immediately by another thing and by another thing and fall down and be dead, you know, pretty much in a split second. Mm-hmm. So if you just happen to have a cave or a cavern that is stacked against you, basically that's it. I mean, you don't get any, you don't keep your money. You don't keep really anything. There are little shops that you can go through. One thing that I do like about this game, and I don't want to say that I don't like it overall. It's just not really speaking to me. It's just kind of there. But one thing that it does have that's kind of neat are the different items and things that you can get. You can find these little shops, and there are, wheels of chance where you can get money, and they have neat little, like climbing gloves where you can grasp onto any side of a wall, even if it's not a ledge, or spectacles that you can get that will allow you to see gems and things that are, because you have bombs that you can blow holes through walls and things. And so
does it follow the UN squadron model where it's pretty hard, but you can buy different things that will help you through the level? Does it give you enough money to do that?
Money is actually pretty plentiful, so I don't think that's a problem. And you do get to keep any items with you as you progress through. So if you get something that is really helpful, like the climbing gloves, I find if you're playing Spelunky, get some damn climbing gloves because you can do pretty much anything. And you keep those as long as you have them. But if you die, again, as far as I can tell, you don't really get to reclaim that or anything. And hopefully some listeners out there – oh, sorry.
And from what I've heard, you can't always guarantee on an item that you like being in a shop. So you might find a shop, and then the climbing gloves just won't be there.
Yeah, that's true. And there are a lot of items. So you can get things like, there's just all kinds of stuff. Spider web guns, and you can basically, when you find a shop, there's a max of 4 or 5 items in it with different prices. And so it's just the luck of the draw what you might be able to get there or not. So you could luck out and find a really cool item at the very beginning and power through with that. But on another session, there might be nothing. And that's fine. I don't mind that. I mean, it's luck of the draw. And that really does make it kind of fun. I do like the items. But the thing for me that's been missing is just the feeling that I'm actually doing anything. It's just that at this stage in my life, if I'm playing a game, I kind of I need to feel like I'm making a good use of my time and I'm actually doing something. I can't just twiddle my thumbs for a while and... and be happy with it. But hopefully some listeners out there, because I know Spelunky's been out here for, a week, 2 weeks now. Some people are probably playing it. Get in the comments. Tell me what I'm missing about this game. Sell me on it, because the rest of the game's press, obviously their, outpouring of love and unconditional, passion for this game has not done it for me. But so Spelunky,
Jimmy, I just don't think you're good at it.
I just need to suck less, I guess. I just need to try harder not to suck so hard.
User error.
Speaking of games that I suck at, I have been playing a little bit of Dyad on the PlayStation 3, which I'm not sure if I like it yet or not. It's really neat. Dyad, which I think is coming out next week, is a... I would say, what it reminds me of the most? I don't know if you guys have seen videos of this, but it's like a high-resolution acid trip version of Tempest, the old vector-based paid game, where you sort
of
you go around...
Of course Tempest.
Well,
you love
have,
that game.
Maybe some listeners have not. But the idea is that you are sort of going around the outside edge of this sort of tubular... acid trip that you're having. You play this sort of tentacled squid thing, and in this tubular zone that you're going through, it works a little bit like the note track or the note highway on Guitar Hero, let's say. So you're sort of pulling yourself forward as this squid thing latching on to these little, they call them enemies, but they're like little grasping nodes that you can do with different colors. And you're sort of pulling yourself through this and trying to avoid dangerous items or dangerous elements. And the game is full of challenges. Every stage has 3 modes that you can do, kind of a normal, get this many combos of the same color of items or the same color of enemies that you're latching on. They do them in pairs because the thing goes so fast. And as you move around the outside edge of this circle, that's the thing that sort of brought me back to Tempest was the low resolution of Tempest made it so that you were, I think basically every time you turned a knob in Tempest. So it may not have been the same thing, but Dyad, I feel like when I use the stick or the D-pad to go around, I always miss my targets that are in the distance in this little tube. So it's really difficult. The thing moves really fast. The challenges are insane. You have to be able to do X number of combos in so many button presses. So if you're if you're not good at, you know, hitting it right on like a sharpshooter every time, you fail out. All trophies are in challenge areas as far as I can tell, and it is cool. There's a lot of music. The music is generated based on the activity that you know your actions in the game. So it looks really cool, sounds really cool. Totally uncompressed audio, 1080p, 60 frames per second. Looks beautiful. Looks fantastic. I'm just really bad at it, so I don't know yet if I really am in love with it. I think it's worth looking into. I believe there will be a demo. There's a demo version, I believe, that's going to be coming out. So try that out, and that's the other thing I've been playing. So,
now, I was looking at a screenshot. It reminded me of this other this PSN game that was this procedurally generated twin stick shooter, and it just throbbed, and it was basically a seizure inducer. Is it anything like that?
Yeah, in fact, actually...
Do you know what game I'm talking about?
Procedurally generated...
twin stick shooter. It got me on that, and then I tried playing it, and it was just, you know, this hardcore kind of house music that would throb, and the whole screen would light up. And
Dyad's a little more mellow than that. Okay. It's sort of like, if you can imagine, Tempest mixed with Audio Surf and... what was that Pixel Junk game? Pixel Junk Eden.
Okay.
Yeah.
Imagine those three having a baby.
Yeah, it's something like that. And actually, it's kind of fun to look around and see how people describe this in terms of other games. I've seen some people say it's like F-Zero. I've seen people say it's like, you know, all kinds of things. So yeah, take a look. Look up a video for it. Take a look at it. It's, again, very simple mechanics. It's just about hitting these little orbs as they come down this track at you in the distance and avoiding them. You know, there are other mechanics. It actually does a very good job of gradually adding on new things as you go. You'll find out that eventually, if you can skirt close to these things as you pass them in the tube, it builds up energy, and then you can do this lancing attack that then allows you to, you know, start crashing through them and breaking them up. So there's a lot there, you know, to kind of keep you busy. And again, it moves so fast that, again, it may be that just my old man reflexes now, I'm having a little bit of trouble keeping up with it. But
I found the name, Beat Hazard Ultra.
Beat Hazard Ultra. I did not play that, but I know that a lot of people have compared this to Jeff Minter's Space Giraffe, which I guess was another sort of, but yeah, they actually give a seizure warning at the beginning. You know, the whole thing about patterns that, you know, you may not
and
have had.
I think Minter programmed Tempest 2000, right?
Oh, I love Tempest 2000. Hey, can I make a Tempest confession here?
Yeah, make it.
The Tempest arcade game I played had a steering wheel, so now I'm not so sure I've ever actually had a true Tempest.
It was a paddle about the size of a hockey puck. No, a little bit smaller.
Yeah, I think looking back, mine might have been a converted Star Wars machine.
Wow, did it have a fire button on there?
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
It was one of those, or maybe a Spy Hunter machine, but it was one of those like rectangular steering wheels.
No, you didn't play Tempest then.
No, I played Tempest. I'm saying I don't think it was on a Tempest machine.
If you played with a steering wheel, you didn't really play Tempest.
Yeah,
that's kind of upsetting to me. You need to turn that wheel around. One of the things is at the, you know, end of the waves, there would be those kind of spiral things, and they would create the those spikes. And sometimes you'd have to really flip because you were thrust down that tube, and you'd have to, you know, transfer it to the other side very quickly. And I remember playing Tempest as a kid, and I'd actually use the side of my hand because I'd get sore after a while playing it.
I feel really weird now, knowing that there was a knob instead of a steering wheel.
Yeah.
Sean, can I make you feel better about yourself?
Sure.
The version of Tempest that I have put the most time into is actually the one on the Retro Atari Classics for the Nintendo DS.
Well, the one I put the most time into is Tempest 2000, but...
Tempest. So, Dyad, actually. Dyad is what we're talking about.
Yeah, sorry.
And then I guess just a brief little mention. Last thing I've been playing is I sunk some time into The Walking Dead Episode 2, which came out on all platforms. I don't know, maybe you want to mention it a little bit. The thing is, I don't think it's getting as much buzz now that the novelty of the first episode is over, but I just want to throw out there to folks who are still on the fence about it that Episode 2, I think I liked it even more than the first episode. Definitely some really great moments. Specifically, there was a moment, I don't have a lot of "Ah, that's a cute kid" moment, but there is an "Ah, that's a cute kid" moment in The Walking Dead Episode 2. It really tucked at your heartstrings, you know? There's some, I mean, they do a good job of playing all the different emotional elements as they take you through the story. I mean, stuff is definitely scary, definitely intense. There's some mystery going on in episode two that you, you know, that you need to try and figure out. And it just in general, it does a really good job. More so than the first episode, I think the more choices that you make as you go through it, again, like we talked about before, none of the choices that you make are great choices, so you just kind of feel a little worse as you go through
I think
every time.
Part of the problem is it just came out on a Friday with little to no announcement. You know, it was just like, here it is. We're finally getting this out. It was due a month ago. And it's coming
I've heard people talking about it. I mean, my thing is that I downloaded it as soon as it hit the network because I was excited about it. But it's one of those games for me that I've got to be in the right station to play it, right? Because my girlfriend hates it, right? She doesn't. I'm saying right a lot, right? My girlfriend hates it, so she doesn't want to be around when I play it. And I also kind of want it to be, you know, dusk-ish when I play that game because I need the atmosphere for that. So instead of playing it, I was listening to other people who had played it talk about it. I didn't listen to any spoiler stuff, but I listened to other people's impressions of it before I played it. And it seemed like it was getting enough buzz through that. I mean, all the podcasts I listened to at least mentioned it and said it was good. But I'm about 2 hours into it, so I'm pushing towards the end of that episode. Okay. But I want to know, what systems did you guys play it on?
I've been playing it on PC through Steam, but I got the PlayStation version for my wife with the understanding that she was going to play it, and she has not. But I've heard that the PS3 version is a little bit of a technical mess.
That's what I was going to ask, because I hadn't heard anybody play it on the PS3, and yeah, it is significantly worse than the first episode as far as...
Did we predict that one?
I don't think we did.
No, you did, Sean.
I predicted that the series as a whole was, going to fall apart by the third episode because that's what Telltale does. But that was super upsetting to me because basically I started it up. It took forever to load. Then once it loaded, it's choppy because it's still loading in the background. And then it gets to the point where it will preload like whatever the next... It seems like it loads in like 5-second clips each scene. And it would preload something, and if it would load too fast, it would just cut off whatever you're doing. So someone might be in the middle of a dialogue thing, and then it just cuts into the next part of the scene. It's bad. It's really bad, and it really took me out of it. But it seems like the further into the episode I get, the less I'm seeing that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully they'll patch.
But I hope so, because it's...
Well, they already patched it once, because when it first released, it actually didn't work on the PS3, right?
I don't know. I didn't play it until last night.
They had a same day patch when it was first released because they would actually get to the loading screen and then stop. But one thing about Telltale, and I know, Sean, we've talked about this as well, but one thing I will say about Telltale as a company is they've issued already, you mentioned it was late. They have issued a mea culpa. They said that the next episode will be out in August, which I don't know if they're rushing stuff through, maybe it'll be even worse. But, back when Jurassic Park came out for people who had pre-ordered it, they, gave them essentially that game and then a voucher for something else. So I think they're aware of it. I don't know that really excuses the technical issues, because you think that they would be, especially being that this is a incredibly story-based game, that they would be all over that. But I have heard corroborating stories to what Sean is saying. So.
Yeah, it's such a bummer. I hope they get their shit together. And my thing too, and I've been saying this for a while, is that there need to be more people making adventure games, because as long as they're the only game in town, they have no reason to get better.
Yep.
Yeah. Now I'm sad.
Aw.
I know what can perk you up.
What?
Hearing some Sailor Moon talk. Blue.
Oh, yeah.
I'm taking off a tiara and throwing it. Wait a minute. That would imply I was actually wearing a tiara. Wait a minute. Edit. Edit. I'm going to change gears a little bit, and I'm going to talk about Soul Calibur 5.
As Jeremy hinted to. Calibur 5 V? Super V?
Sailor
Yes.
V?
Solar V Calibur.
Sailor V? This was one of the games that Best Buy had on sale. If you have their At Gamer magazine or pick it up, and there's a coupon in it, and it was actually down to $10. And I mean, this is kind of why I don't buy things new day one, because this thing came out like end of January, beginning of February, and it's already down to $10.
There is almost no reason to buy stuff at launch.
That's it's ridiculous. But fortunately, the game itself is very good, with a few asterisks. For starters, the roster,
the campaign mode, the story mode.
That was going to be one of them. Basically, the story mode has sequences where the game is, where the game engine, you know, plays out the cutscenes, you know, characters will interact or whatever. But the rest of the time, it's just spoken dialogue, like, you know, like a visual novel or whatever. And on the screen is I can't describe it any better than just glorified concept art. It's not, you know, fancy or really that stylish. It just looks like a.
It looked like a drawing from a 12-year-old from his Edge book.
I was playing this also, and I think the drawings are actually not bad. But Blue, you are. I have heard that they actually did not get to put in the assets and the things that they had planned for the campaign. So it's not that, you know, which is an unfortunate thing. And for whatever reason, I would really like to know the story about this. I'm sure somebody's probably done some, you know, checking on it. But they had originally planned for it to be an actual, you know, animated or full motion thing, just like you would expect. But for whatever reason, they weren't able to complete the production schedule, and they put in the art and the voice assets that they had and left it that way.
Right.
The
other problem I thought was controlling the brother and sister. It's like, here you get this great roster of characters, and here comes some new people that you really don't care about and aren't that interested.
Yeah, like, who's this dude? Yeah, I kind of got that, too.
Does it have Huang in it?
Huarong?
Huang?
Huang? Huang?
Huang?
Pretty sure.
I can never pronounce his name either.
It's Huang, but he. I don't think he's been in one since Soul Calibur 1. He was in 2 as Assassin, but...
No, he's the dude with the big scimitar, like the Korean fighting guy who does the jumps around.
Yeah, but they replaced him with a different guy, a different Korean guy with a scimitar, and his moveset was different.
Really? Did they? I didn't even notice.
Yeah, it was, not Kwok. I don't know, something else.
They did not replace Ivy or Taki, I know that.
Yeah, they are all over the... But Huang was always my jam. I went to a tournament as Huang and almost won, but... When they took him out, and then they took Assassin out, I stopped. I didn't want to learn a new character.
Well, you know, the new characters that are in here, that some of them replace, you know, characters from the other games, and that's one beef that I kind of have with it. It's like, you know, even though they play similarly, you know, it's kind of part of the personality, you know, part of it is the personalities kind of keep you attached to a character. And like, for example, Taki, I mean, at least as far as the default roster goes, I haven't unlocked any of the characters yet, but Taki has been replaced by, I'm going to call her a ninja meets valley girl in Natsu, I believe her name is.
So you love her.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm someone who believes that, you know, when it comes to fighting games, the roster should always stay the same, but have more added to it. And even when the moveset's, you know, comparable and whatnot, when you change the characters, you know, it just rubs me the wrong way.
So how do you feel about games like Mortal Kombat where they legit kill a character in the story so that he's not in the next game? Like when Liu Kang Liu Kang like canonically dies, and so he was not in a couple of the games.
Hey, he's in Mortal Kombat Vita.
And he is. That's when Raiden rebooted the universe.
Well, you know, I mean, that's one. I guess that's one way of doing it. I mean, if you're gonna take a character out of a game, and you kill him, I guess it makes sense for him not to be in the next one. Or, but, you know, I mean, if it's just going to be the sort of thing where so-and-so is plunged into the deep abyss, will he ever get out? He's probably met his untimely doom or something like that. I mean, you know, unless you, like, see the dead body on the floor, they need to be in the next game.
Yeah. Well, and Soul Calibur has never really been about storytelling either.
Well, the weird thing is it is, though, right? I mean, they actually have this long cutscene about the two swords have always been fighting, and now they are, you know. I mean, they really do. There's actually in fact, I bet if we look on the internet, there's probably a timeline about exactly what has happened. And I'm not just
I was actually checking it out this afternoon a little bit.
And the part when Link came, and then Yoda was there, and then, you know. I mean, it probably exists.
And Spawn. Don't forget Spawn.
Yeah, Spawn was
there. Oh, yeah, Spawn was cool. He was actually my main in Soul Calibur 2. But, you know, as far as, you know, I haven't played it online yet. I mean, with online games, I have to be really, I have to feel really, really confident in my ability to be halfway decent. Otherwise, I just mess around with the offline modes. And if I get better enough and feel, you know, courageous or whatever, I'll jump online. But otherwise, I'm not in the mood to feel humbled.
Yeah. You know what, though? I'm not that great at fighting games anymore. And when I played Virtua Fighter 5 online, I still found that to be a fun experience. So I wouldn't discount. If you're going to play online ever, I would do it now when there are still other shitty people that you can practice against. I'm serious, because that sale is going to bring a lot of people into it. So I would, if you want to try it, I would try it soon.
I probably will sometime in the next day or so. I'm still kind of getting a feel for the characters. I mean, I've kind of mained Ivy as well, in the, you know, since Spawn hasn't been back in the series. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've been, you know, because of the new roster, I've been, you know, checking out several different characters. And, you know, like I said, I was checking out Natsu, and I'm thinking about, you know, trying to learn her more. But I sat down with the training mode for a couple of minutes, and I mean, you know, I've played Virtua Fighter's training mode where you can really learn the move set, and with Soul Calibur 5, it's set up in a kind of a different way. It's not like the sort of thing where you put a move on the screen, and then when you do it, it moves on to the next one. And then you do that move, and then you move on to the next one. It's basically, I guess, you kind of queue up like a particular move. Then you practice it and practice it and practice it, and then you go into the menus, flip around, and then move to the next one or something to that effect. And yeah, it's kind of making things a little harder to learn, but it's, I mean, honestly, I mean, it was $10 at Best Buy. Right. It's worth it. You know, it's, I mean, it's gorgeous.
For $5 more, you could have gotten Virtua Fighter 5.
I am going to get that one of these days.
You should. It's really good. It is really, really good.
I'm definitely going to be pulling the trigger on that sooner or later. I have the demo on my 360. I just haven't, you know, picked up a points card or anything lately. But
do it. We're not friends anymore.
Oh. two of the things I've been playing recently was actually I finished up both Metroid Other M and the original Metroid Prime as a part of the Metroid Prime trilogy.
Mm.
Yeah, and that was the first time I've finished Metroid Prime 1. I had it on the GameCube, and I just could never get into the controls on that. It just never felt quite as responsive as I wanted it to. I'm not sure if I was spoiled by the twin stick FPS format or what, but it never felt comfortable on the cube. And then when I, when I picked up Metroid Prime 3 Corruption,
yeah,
and that was the first one on the Wii, and the controls and it were absolutely, I mean, it was perfection for the Metroid Prime format. I loved the controls in that. I mean, of course, you know, the layout of the buttons could have been a little bit better because they're with the Wii remote, you know, maybe it's a little difficult to kind of reach down and hit like the map buttons and the menu buttons or whatever. But
can I tell you something about those controls? Those controls are actually what finally sold me on a PlayStation Move.
Really?
Literally, yeah. Like playing the Metroid Prime trilogy, which, by the way, that you said that's the version you're playing. If anybody out there can get your hands on a copy of the Metroid Prime trilogy, it is like the choice game, the choice item that you should have for your Wii. It's so good.
Yeah, if you have a Wii, it's an essential. I'd say put that with like Super Mario Galaxy and Super Mario Galaxy 2. And I mean, it's if you have a Wii, yeah. Like
it's also like $60 even used, but if you have the good fortune to come across a copy and you have the money to spare, I would say get it. At least just have it on your shelf. It looks good, comes in a nice steelbook. But yeah, that playing that, and I was like, all right, I want to play some real first-person shooters, so I got a PlayStation Move. Never looked
back.
Yeah,
I was about to say, I'm going to wait for them to port Metroid Prime to the PS3 so I can play it with the Move.
there are some great
FPS. It's going to be a long wait.
We'll have a PlayStation Move episode. We'll talk all about Move games. There's some good stuff on the PS3.
I know.
But yeah, I finished that up, and I also before that I finished up Metroid Other M. I was about 2 hours or so from the end, and you know that's another game that I ended up picking up when it was like $10 at Best Buy or GameStop or something like that, and. You know, that game gets a lot of hate. I mean, of course, I'll poke fun at it going, you know, the baby. On Twitter. The baby.
Baby.
Yeah, on Twitter. But, I mean, I got to say, it maybe isn't worth like $50 that I think I saw it over at like Walmart, I believe, and it's still going for 50.
It's $20. But, you can find it easily for 20.
Yeah, it's, you know, at that price, it's worth it. It's not as bad.
The criticism I've heard about it is that it seems like it is too tailored for you. And I don't mean that as a bad thing, but I mean, it seemed like a game that was very suited to your taste, which might not necessarily be the Metroid tastes.
This is another one of those blood in the water games for me, because I agree with Blue. Like a lot of people, you know, as we all saw, you know, the baby and you know, they were making Samus more of a submissive character and that sort of thing. So that's kind of weird, I guess, but I'm ready to play this and love it one day. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
You know, and yeah. They really put a lot of emphasis on the story in it. And I mean, this is one of the few Nintendo games I can think of that were, you know, every ounce of text in the cutscenes is voiced.
Well, it's also not a Nintendo game. It's a Team Ninja game.
Surprisingly, it's a decent Team Ninja game. They haven't made good shit since Itagaki left. Well, I mean, I balance issues aside, Dead or Alive Dimensions wasn't terrible, but it's more Itagaki's engine than anything.
Did we talk about the picture I sent you during E3?
The DOA girls with their clothes on.
Yeah, DOA. We were watching them play DOA, and it was a guy in a Speedo versus a girl who could not be more covered up. She had
Victorian
like
girl
neck and yeah. Big poofy hammer pants on.
Oh, what has happened to Team Ninja? But yeah, Nintendo really needs to put more voice dialogue in their games. I mean, if they treated, you know, The Legend of Zelda the way they treated Metroid Other M, I think there'd be a lot of Abby fanboys and girls out there. I mean, it really wasn't that bad.
That's true. That is an interesting point, that they really kind of went outside of the normal silent protagonist comfort zone. And for something like Metroid, which personally I believe could really stand with some, you know, a little more fleshing out of the universe. There's a really neat Metroid retrospective, I think, over on Game Trailers that's been there for a few years that goes through the timeline of the Metroid games. And there really is kind of a story there, but they've never really done anything with it, I think, until they did a little bit of it in Corruption and then apparently here in Other M. And I think that's a pretty bold move for them. I mean, whether Team Ninja was the right group to do that or not, I guess, is another question, but I think that's worth noticing. I'm glad you brought that up.
I don't know, it seems like whenever they do something to placate that area of the fan base, though, it doesn't meet with critical success and doesn't meet with sales success, because I mean, Metroid's done that before with what was the Game Boy Advance one,
Zero Mission or Fusion
has a lot of voiced it's text dialogue, but Samus says stuff in that way.
Well, and that's like the same character here. Like, isn't it like Adam Malkovich or something like that?
Yeah.
It's the same. Yeah. So this is sort of a successor to that, or is it a prequel to that? Where does this fit in that timeline? Because I guess Fusion is the very last game in the series, something like that.
Is it
chronologically? I think it is. Maybe not.
Was that or was it Super Metroid.
Super Metroid comes before Other M, because Other M is a direct sequel to Super Metroid.
Yeah. Check out this retrospective. If you're listening, check out this retrospective on Game Trailers Metroid. It only goes up to Corruption, I think, because it was done a few years ago. But it is excellent. They did a few retrospectives there, and one that I'll probably remember forever because it lays out exactly the chronology of the series. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. That and Twilight Princess are the ones that come to mind as like, hey, let's placate the like really hardcore fans of this series and give them something a little deeper and whatever. And it doesn't pan out. Like, people don't actually want that. They want to be able to write their fanfic about it. But when the actual creators put that forward, they're like, no, because look, Samus doesn't even sleep with me in this, you know? Like, obviously, if she's going to talk, it's going to be, hey, Blue Swim, I want your body. That's all she's going to say. It says right here in my script.
Take 50 copies and buy a day one.
Yeah, I think most of the problems that the critics had with this game was more about some of the... I've got to be a little sensitive about this, but like the Japanese-y kinds of, you know, the portrayal of Samus as a female character. I think most of that was kind of the main problem people had. So I don't think it's impossible to do, but I think if you're going to do something like that, you should probably choose with care.
Well, and I'm
Sean,
say...
was Majora's Mask for N64, was that a success or is that a failure?
I didn't sell very well.
Okay. Well, that proves
but
your point.
People love it. It's one of my favorite Zelda games.
Yeah, I've heard it's good. I've actually never played Majora's Mask because I'm not a huge, Nintendo fan in general, but I'm not.
But that's kind of when Zelda broke the mold, and I didn't know, you know, how well it did. But that, again, would kind of prove...
There's a reason they remade Ocarina of Time.
Mm-hmm.
There have been rumors that the next 3DS Zelda game is going to be a remake of Majora's Mask.
I'm sure it will be because...
Oh, I hope it is.
N64 remakes seem to be fairly cheap and easy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much what I've been playing. Of course, I've been playing some Famicom stuff. And, of course, fulfilling my stereotype, I have been playing a Sailor Moon game. And, yeah, it's... I haven't finished it yet. I keep dying around the third level. So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Hard to play those games with one hand.
Baiter's got a bait. Oh, wow. Yeah, I think it's time for trivia.
Nobody cares what I played?
No, Mario. Tell us.
I just talked about how I don't like Nintendo games. I played...
You talked about The Walking Dead.
I did talk about The Walking Dead. I played New Super Mario Brothers Wii from beginning to end.
How is that?
It's okay. If you're not
you
a big Mario
for...
fan, there's nothing to hold you nostalgia-wise. So it is a platformer, and it is a good platformer. And I played it with my brother, which was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
That game offers absolutely nothing on single player, I think.
No.
Does it excite you for New Super Mario Brothers Wii U?
No, because my brother will be in another place in the country, and so I do not want to play that game by myself.
Have you played Galaxy, Sean? You more?
I have played Galaxy. Galaxy was fun.
Yeah,
but I mean, as far as like the Mario license doesn't do it for me. I didn't own a Super Nintendo when it was in its heyday, so it's like I missed everything from 3 on. So when you tell me that a new Mario game's coming out, it doesn't do anything for me, right. But the mechanics are fun, basically, is what it comes down to.
That's
have you
weird.
Never played Super Mario World?
Yeah, that's weird.
I have played it at friend's house. I did not sit through it.
Hmm.
Dude,
I mean, not that
I totally
like
have Sonic 3D Blast at home.
Oh, poor kid.
And it's a 3D.
Remedy that.
But no, it's funny because my mom has a Wii, and she
really?
Plays
That's...
it with my cousin's kids.
Oh,
she
babysits. Nintendo Wii.
A Nintendo Wii. she plays it with my cousin who's 3, and so he went over to her house today to get a because she babysits him while my cousin is at work, and. He's 3, so he doesn't quite understand the idea of level progression. To him, the idea is that you go to these levels and you just run through them till the end. And before each level, you pick an item And you're basically just trying to have as much fun as you can with that item. But of course, he hasn't been earning items because he doesn't understand that concept. Mm-hmm. So he turned it on today, apparently, and the game, everything is open, and he has billions of items because my brother and I had, we had no use for using the items at the beginning because all the levels are designed around the fact that you shouldn't need to use an item at the beginning. It's just for if you suck, which we don't. So
he's
got
a great
like,
asset for you guys.
Yeah, he's got tens of everything now, and he just thinks that that is the coolest shit. So so we played that. We played Dead Space Extraction, which it's funny how...
PS3 or Wii?
Wii, because, I mean, that's all she has is a Wii. Oh. And it's funny how two-player in that is so tacked on at the end, because, like, you share health bars, basically, but it gives you each an individual health bar, but, I mean, it's the same bar. You kind of share ammo, I think, and then when at the end of the level where it gives you the score, it doesn't calculate your score separately. So it says we both have the same number of shots, the same number of hits, the same number of points, same damage and everything. And then the text all runs into each other because they didn't test that, I guess. And it doesn't really give you a story reason for you to all of a sudden have another gun.
Do you actually have two hands, both of your hands on one Wiimote? When you're playing,
could have.
You know, you could probably dual wield this game. I never even really thought about that.
It would make more sense story wise because even when you're in two players, you are in the head of the one guy.
That's right. It is a story. Yeah.
Or are you? Maybe you're hallucinating that you
are.
I
don't know. Yeah. But yeah, and that game has terrible. So one of the things that a good light gun shooter needs is you need to know when you hit something, and that game does not. So
really, because the limbs fall off. I mean, I played it on the PlayStation; it seemed all right. But
the boss fights when it's something like so, like the one that really comes to mind is there's one where this big tentacle monster guy, and you have to shoot his hands. And,
is that the one down in the sewer?
You got to shoot his hands so that he doesn't hit you, but you don't know if you've hit it because the animation for you hitting it is kind of this organic kind of whatever, and then he just doesn't follow through with hitting you.
Yeah.
And doesn't it flash red when you connect or anything like that?
It doesn't flash red. It doesn't even make a splat or anything. It's just, I guess I must have hit him because he didn't attack me this time.
You know, as the foremost tentacle podcast on the internet, we have to demand more.
Yeah.
We might be number two.
There were only four tentacles on that monster.
After Tentacle Cast.
Yeah.
And it's tech gaming.
But we played that game all the way through, and then we played Skylanders. And that game is just as much of a money sink as everybody says it is.
Is it money sink for you, or is it just you can tell that it's a money sink?
Have you guys noticed that the price of Skylanders have just skyrocketed? You used to be able to find those little fuckers for $5. Now everywhere, $9 at the lowest. Most places at $10.
That was the thing. So my mom loved Spyro. So we got her Skylanders because like she had heard about it and she was like,
tell you she's not going to like that.
But... No, she actually likes it. She knows it's different. She was upset at the beginning because she couldn't fly. But she had heard about Skylanders. She specifically asked for it. So we got it for her.
So your mom has a Wii and a Portal of Power?
And a Portal of Power. but yeah, it's one of those things that I give this to my mom. Like, I don't see my mom going and buying all these figures. No. Maybe she will. I don't know. She's looked at the poster. She's like, I want this one. I'm like, are you actually going to go buy that, Mom?
Instead of Precious Moments figurine, she's going to buy dragons and stuff.
Yeah. My mom, I love her to death. She's a child.
You got that gene, Sean. That's good.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if the Portal of Power would work with other action figures.
I was just going to ask. I was going to ask, does the Portal of Power work with different platforms?
No.
That's pathetic.
Not for 360 to Wii.
No, it doesn't go. I think the Wii has a special one. I think it's the 360 and PS3. It's the same hardware.
Same, yeah.
I think that's what it was. And I think the Wii has its own one and the 3DS has its own one.
But I guess it doesn't matter because as long as somebody else has their own proprietary Portal of Power, your pewter people will.
Pewter
people? I don't know. I was just trying to think of pewters.
Yeah. but it does not work with my Marvel Superhero Squad Captain America. So.
Does it work with my Mecha Godzilla?
It comes with little cards where you can play online, I don't know, maybe some free-to-play Skylanders. When I reviewed it, that was not up yet. Is it that working? Did you?
My mom has the worst internet and crappy ebook, so we were not able to get that to work.
Okay.
Yeah. So that didn't work. But I did play Metal Gear Solid 3, and that port is not as good as Metal Gear Solid 2, and it takes forever to load and has crappy texture pop-ins. So I don't know how the remake of that got all 9s and 9.5s across the board, but that is an upsetting port.
Okay, I have a question for you that is relevant, because they have just announced that Metal Gear Solid 4 is going to be patched in with trophies and some kind of new game mode. I think I've mentioned before that I've only ever gotten into the first 10 minutes of Metal Gear Solid 3 on like 5 separate occasions. I just keep falling asleep. Should I play the HD version of Metal Gear Solid 3, or should I go with my PlayStation 2 version that I've already had for like 10 years?
I would go with that. It's not worth purchasing it again. This is basically subsistence. Which I've realized that everything they added to the core game from Subsistence, I don't like. I think part of that's because I went from playing 2 to 3, and if you go from, you know, traditional Metal Gear controls to third-person shooter controls, like, in one fell swoop, it's super awkward. So I would just play Metal Gear Solid 3 if you already own it. I wouldn't bother with the HD remake. On our last episode, I told Deagle he should replay it because he didn't enjoy it, and I said you'll enjoy it more the second time. This is my third time playing it, and I'm enjoying it far less. It's negatively coloring.
So play it a second time, not a third.
Two times only, and then stop.
Two times, not three. Well, it's one of those things that I'm realizing that the camo index thing is complete bullshit. Like, I had a 95%.
Sean, that was my complaint. That's why you told me to replay it.
I think I ended up clearing the game dressed like a scientist with, like, flower face paint.
Well, it's not that. It's like I had 95% camo index and somebody still saw me from across the field and like, what the fuck? And like, I was going to do it stealthily and then I decided, you know, fuck it, I'm not going to do this. And then I looked at the trophy list. They don't even have a trophy for finishing it stealthily because they probably know it's a huge pain in the ass.
You know what? The non-lethal playthroughs of any game is bullshit. Never do it.
There is a non-lethal playthrough option, but not a no alert phase playthrough. Like there was from Metal Gear Solid.
How do you fight the bosses?
There's always a non-lethal way to kill every boss in a Metal Gear game. It's usually, you know, take them out with a tranquilizer dart.
Oh, okay.
But there's.
I think that's baloney too. I mean, I think that if you're gonna, you know, if you're gonna take out that sniper with, you're gonna wait him out until he falls out of that tree.
Yeah, he's trying to kill you. You're not.
See who's got a whole other bladder. Of.
Yeah. Well, I think
that is a reference to that memory card thing, isn't it?
What memory card thing?
You know, where if you left your PS2 on or saved during that sniper boss fight.
Oh, yeah, he would die?
Yeah, he would die of starvation, a couple of days later or something like that?
Well, he dies of old age. He's old. It's true. That's the story. The story reason is he dies of old age. Because that's the end's thing, is that the end is over 100 years old, but he stays alive by the fact that he's only really awake when he's fighting, and if you have to keep him awake for that long, then he'll die. Like he really only has a few more hours to live at any given point in that game.
See, I thought it was the Edge who was the sniper in that game, and it was a U2 reference. No,
but he's also a
Plano. One last bit of trivia is that you can actually take out was it the End or
the End. You can take him out during one of the cutscenes, but you get a trophy for that. And then you have to do that boss fight.
Blue, did you say trivia?
I said trivia.
Yeah. And the end. Coming to the end of our show, let's get things started. Number one this week, Dungeon Fighter Live. Fall of Hendronmire challenges up to 4 cooperative characters with taking on monsters multiplying through the lands of Phantasmalia. You ever been there?
Wow.
Yeah, that's a place. Which one of the following roles won't heroes be able to take? A, fighter, B, gunner, C, cleric, or D, slayer?
I'm going to go with D, slayer. I think it seems like an obvious choice to be in there, but probably won't be.
I believe the answer is cleric.
No, I think there is a cleric. It's not cleric, it's not gunner, slayer. I'm going to say the one that wasn't any of those three, whatever the fourth choice was.
Fighter?
Fighter. Wait, maybe I take it back. No, you know what? I'm going to stick with it. No fighter. I'm going all the way. No fighter.
Okay. Correct answer, cleric.
Yeah.
I like the way you were sorting that out in your head.
You know which game you can play a cleric in that's similar is Dungeons & Dragons, the arcade game, which is fucking awesome.
Yeah, that is cool. You ever play the dungeon in No, what's the one? It's got trivia in it, and you kill dragons.
Oh, I have that for PSP because it's on the Capcom collection. I cannot remember what it's called. That is a weird game.
It's like dragons and trivia.
Yeah, and the trivia is now like outdated. So outdated.
Yes, it's like, what is Ronald Reagan's middle name?
Yeah.
Okay. Number two, you might remember MotoGP, the motorcycle sim series put out by Capcom, but probably only this week's PSN shoppers have heard of Handspree 10-Kate Honda SBK, a title which transported PS2 owners from bargain bin aisles to the top of a 50cc road rocket. What year was this game originally released? So one more time, Handspree 10-Kate Honda SBK. Was that 2003? 2005, 2007, or 2009?
I'm going to say 2000.
I'm going 2005.
I'd say 2007.
Okay, correct answer, 2007. So what's the difference? Oh. Okay, bonus points. What's the difference between Handspree, 10-Kate Honda, and MotoGP? You guys know the difference?
Man, I gotta be honest. I couldn't tell where one title ended and the other one started.
You know? MotoGP has more than just Hondas in it.
The correct answer was B, that MotoGP has true race bikes and Handspree has ones you can buy from the dealer, just souped up.
Wait, you said B as if that was a question, but you never gave us answers for it.
No, I just saw it off the top of my head. You guys might.
Bonus question.
Bonus, yeah.
Number that means three. It was actually better than just the normal question.
PS3 owners also have a chance to play Rainbow Moon this week, a PSN exclusive SRPG. Name which of the following isn't part of publisher East Asia Studios' output. Is it A, Soldner Final Prototype, B, Protect the Monkeys, C, Cyclists, or D, Final Combat?
I'm going to go with Protect the Monkey, since it sounds kind of different from the other three.
I'm going to go with A, because I want to say it's C, but you wouldn't make these all C.
I'm going to say Final Combat, because it was also the final answer.
Like Jeremy's logic, and he got the right answer. Final Combat.
Oh, yeah.
Number four, yeah. Time to hop to it, if that it means Frogger Hyper Arcade Edition. In this case, Hyper means skins from arcade classics. Which of the following franchises isn't represented in the game? Is it A, Gradius, B, Contra, C, Castlevania, or D, 8-bit old school Frogger? I just threw in old school just for you, Jeremy.
Thank you. It's very old school. I'm going to say Castlevania.
Okay. I'm also going to say Castlevania.
I'll agree.
Correct answer, Gradius. Dun, dun, dun.
What? Damn it. Seems like such an obvious one, though.
Yeah. Number five, if the Summer Olympic Games are too hot for you, why not cool your acorns with Ice Age Continental Drift's collection of Arctic Games? Which of the following events won't you be able to play?
A, hot dog.
Tundra Tug of War, B, Coconut Slingshotting, C, Glacier Hopping, or D, the Prehistoric Plumber?
What was the first one? Tug of War?
Tundra Tug of War.
I'll go with that.
I'm going to say glacier hopping, because I think that they would know that a glacier is not like the same thing as an iceberg that you can just hop across. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to give them at least that credit.
I was going to say glacier hopping too, because it's the only one I could not see working on an Olympic game sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Correct answer, Tundra Tug of War. Glacier
hopping. Again, that seems so obvious.
Go with the obvious. Okay, last question, number six. You guys know what ATM is?
Yeah, it's an automated teller machine.
I'm sorry.
ATM machine?
I couldn't even get that out. A2M. You guys heard of that?
I know Sega AM.
I bet Blue's heard more about it than we have, though.
Well, behavior, formerly known as artificial mind and movement, or A2M, has quite a remarkable track record. Name the game these Montreal-based developers didn't make. Is it A, Disney's Kim Possible Communicator, B, Brave the video game, C, Wet, one of Sean's favorites, or D, Legend of K? Again,
I'm going to go with Legend of Kane.
I'm going to say Kim Possible because I just can't see A2M being a Kim Possible related in any way.
Yeah, I'm going to say that too because it seems too obvious for jokes. So does Wet, but you I think you picked this just to get my goat, so it's not going to be Wet. So I'm going to say Kim Possible.
Correct answer, Legend of K.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Call me, beat me if you want to reach me.
And that's trivia.
It's a naked mole rat, I swear.
A2M. That's terrible.
I kept on thinking Sega AM, too.
Yeah, I know, right?
I always get them confused. So we got mailbag. We got a question from Bumbles that only cares about Sean Nola. Seems like a lot of superhero games just copy Arkham Asylum. Nola, if you could work on a brand new comic book property, which one would it be, and what design decisions would you make?
I think I've already answered this before, but if just in case I haven't, I have this dream to make an open world Spawn game, where it's a Spawn reboot, where he's got the timer again, mm-hmm. and every action you make cuts down the timer, so there's basically got to be branching story paths where you can either go after Malbogia, or you can kind of try and recoup your family, or you can go after what's his name that hired you as a mercenary and screwed you over. You can do any of those things, but any choice you make, you're kind of cutting off that one track that you could have done, because you can only do so much before, you know, whatever that end game was supposed to be for Spawn that never happened. Which was always kind of one of the big disappointments in comics, and I think an open world video game would be an opportunity to revisit that, and I think that would be cool and unique to that character.
I'd like to briefly answer this question as well, because I think the world needs to hear this. You know, it was just announced that Rocksteady Studios is going to be doing a sort of a prequel sort of thing, a Silver Age Batman game to their follow up to Batman Arkham City. I really think, this isn't technically a comic, but I would really like to see them do a full-on, like, faithful representation of the Adam West 1960s yes. Batman TV show. And I see no reason why it couldn't work. You could have the Biff and Pow, and I even thought of this. You could have the two different versions of the Riddler, the Frank Gorshin, who is the Riddler we think of, but then also the guy who played Gomez Adams, John Astin. You could have downloadable skins for this.
Sound bites from the show, maybe?
Yes. The last time when we saw Batman, and you could have all the little gadgets like the bat shark repellent. You could do all of this. This must happen, and I want everybody who hears this to send a tweet or send an email to Rocksteady Studios. Demand this game. We must have it.
You know what, though? You know what system that game would have been on? The Dreamcast. Think about it.
I think the license or the merchandising issues with the old Adam West Batman show got sorted out recently. So, you know, we might get the show on DVD, and that would open the door for Adam West Batman game.
You could take the Anne Hathaway. Everybody's kind of like, I don't know if she'll be a good Catwoman. Julie Newmar. That's all I got to say.
Oh, yeah.
I never said that, for the record. Team Hathaway right here. You guys, how do you pronounce the name of the new console? I've only read about it. Is it Ouya?
I think it's Ouya.
Ouya?
Yeah, I think
well,
that's how it's meant.
Right?
If you look at their Kickstarter video, it sounds like the Zuma, like Zuma, except it's Ouya.
Yeah.
Ouya.
Ouya. Ouya. So, JRPG lover, thinking of Ouya! We use in here twice. If you could design a console, what would it be like? Ouya!
It would be like the Vita, except it would have games on it.
Perfect cell phone ring right there. Someone snip that little clip of Robert saying, Ooyah! And that can be your new cell phone ring.
Yeah. Along with eradicate those targets. So, guys, design a console.
Vita.
I would make... I would make a brand new retro system.
That's been done. It's the Retro 3.
Yeah.
Done. Blue sure. wins. That's it. He wins. He wins this question.
Jeremy, did you have an answer?
You know, I feel like it's not so much going to be about designing the console as it is going to be about designing the delivery system. I think most of the, you know, I read a really interesting article about, as you guys know, I'm into my peripherals. I like my Move controllers, my steering wheels, things like that. And I read a couple of interesting articles recently about how games aren't really meant to be played on office equipment like PC, mouse, and keyboard, which, you know, to some people that might be really offensive, but it makes a lot of sense. Right. And I read another article that said, you know, in the future, really the thing that's going to define a console is not going to be be necessarily its specs, but rather the input devices. You know, are you going to use a controller? Are you going to have more liberty to stream whatever kind of content that you want? So I really think it's going to be less about the console. I mean, it's probably, you know, it's a little hard to predict, you know, that the entire industry is going to go this way, but I think it's really, I mean, really all you have, this is a big belief of mine, is that all you have as a player in relation to your content is your interface. So I think it's going to be more finding different interesting ways to let people interact with their games, basically. So it's kind of a harder question in that sense, but honestly, I don't think it'll look a lot different from what we've got right now, you know, game pads and things like that. But I think it's going to be more a question of, you know, how are you getting that content? So
my console would not have Kinect attached to it in any shape or form.
It doesn't have a Kinect attached to it now, does it?
There's the rumor that 720 is going to be bundled with Kinect.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Kinect 2. Sorry.
The Ouya thing is interesting to me because, and I'm totally swiping this concept from my coworker who brought it up, but so they raised $2 million in 2 days for this Android-based console, and to think that they can get that out before some other company realizes that that's profitable and makes something is ludicrous. Like, you think Google's looking at that and going, oh, good for them, I hope that works out for them. No, they're like, shit, there's a market for that, and there's no way that they can put this out for...
created the Nexus 7.
Wait, what?
Look how fast Google created that last tablet.
Yeah.
Well, but I'm just saying that...
Yeah. No, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, so. There's no reason that some bigger company, like even Sony, could do it if they wanted to. I'm just throwing out people with actual manufacturing experience. For $2 million, it's going to take some time. But for any other company that's like, oh, yeah, throw a couple million into this and get it out ASAP, boom, you have some cheap Android console. By the time the Ouya actually gets in anybody's hands, there will already be something like that out there.
There'll be the Chinese imports that will already predate it by a couple months.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of strikes
called
me.
Booyah.
Anybody up for some booyah?
I can't top that, but it strikes me that it's almost like it's going back to older days when, you know, there were platforms that different manufacturers made those consoles, and I find that kind of interesting as well. I mean, they're just using a generic operating system, which is why they, you know, well, generic, I should take that back. It's the Android operating system, which is an open operating system. So I think those
we're
are all
back
good points.
Is it the Panasonic 3DO?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Or the JVC Sega CD.
Yeah, or I'll take it back. Sears had a version of the Atari 2600. Was it Telcade? Somebody will correct me on that one. Sorry, guys, but
something
yeah,
like that.
Sears had one.
Sounds familiar.
Margarine. Am I saying that correctly, guys?
Margin.
Best band console and controller and game character ever.
Do you just want to do this in order that we have our names listed on the outline?
Sure.
All right. So you go first.
Me. Best band Smiths, console Genesis, best controller, DualShock, game character ever. I'm going to go with Kratos. Not that I'm a big fan of the God of War games, but I like the way they merged him with mythology.
Best band, the Warsaw Philharmonic, the best console.
Warsaw Philharmonic. Huh?
Best console.
SNES.
No. PS2?
Yeah.
Best controller, the DualShock and... Oh, no, I take that back. The Saturn controller. The Saturn controller. It's those clicky buttons, man. They do it for me.
The one that came with Knights?
No, not that one. The standard one. I've got a USB one that I actually use for any game I play on my PC. And best game character ever... Oh, I wanted to say Sonic or Mega Man or something like that, but game characters generally suck.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that.
Max Payne, why not?
Because he's grumpy.
Yeah, I like how he walks across blood.
Blue, you're up. Best band, Nickelback.
Best band, if I'm in a good mood, Aerosmith. If I'm in a bad mood,
Spice
Nirvana.
Girls.
Yeah, Spice. Yeah, we all know your answer, Spice Girls. What are you even doing joking around like this?
I'll throw in a reference to Japanese rock band The Pillows, because their music from Fooly Cooly was kick-ass. Console, I'll go with Super Nintendo, because it's the Super Nintendo. It's Nintendo, but... controller, yeah, I'll probably... Even though the D-pad's a little stiff on the SNES controller, I'll say the Super Nintendo controller as well. And game character, ooh. Mario's kind of bland.
I know, right? When you start to think about the macrocosm of video games and what characters there are, like, not a whole lot of actual likable characters when you right. think out of their out of the context of their controls.
And they don't, and especially the old ones don't have a lot of depth, like Sir Arthur. He wears underwear and underneath his suit of armor, so therefore we should like him.
Yeah.
I guess for game character, Hubert? Maybe either Cammy or Phoenix Wright.
Oh, Phoenix Wright's a good choice. I like that.
Hmm. Objection!
He's plucky.
Man, that kind of makes me want to choose a different character. All right, best band for me, Weird Al Yankovic. Best console, PlayStation 3. Best controller, GameCube. Best game character, I want to say me. Because I am
that was my smart-ass answer I was going to give.
But I really mean it, though, because I was thinking about me in... Like, I was actually thinking about the old PC RPG action or adventure series Quest for Glory by Sierra. And I was thinking about my favorite game series, and I was like, ah, that's a really good game series, but I'm the character. So, oh, I'm the character. I'm the best game character ever.
I was going to say me from Monster Hunter, but when you brought up Sierra, now I kind of want to go back and say... Roger
no take backsies. No take
Roger Wilco is a great
Roger Wilco's a Roger Wilco is a good one. Roger Wilco is a good one. But you know, when Blue said Phoenix Wright, I kind of makes me want to say Herschel Layton. I kind of want to say Herschel Layton. He's like a mix between MacGyver. Yeah. He's like a mix between MacGyver and like himself.
If you're going to say Herschel Layton, I'm going to say Cooking Mama.
You know what?
Wait. Cooking Mama, why? She's pretty one-dimensional.
Because she will
there
fix
you
it.
Think for.
I don't have to worry.
Wait, but what does she do when you do a bad job? I can't even tell what she says.
She says, don't worry, Mama will fix it. And
No. What does she say when you do a bad job, though? It's like, do not nice or something. Like, I don't know what she's saying. Like, what is it when you do a bad job?
You don't.
Does anyone know, literally? Does anybody in the world know?
You're worrying, and she's just told you not to do that. She'll fix it, Jeremy.
Sean's got a weird thing for
do not nice. Well, there we go.
I saw his eyes aglow when he stood next to her. At E3 for a photograph.
Anyway, if you liked what you heard, why not check out what we write? Point your browser to www.techgaming.com for the latest reviews, previews, and new release info. If you like our opinions on... What?
Nothing.
If you like our opinions on gaming, chances are you might find our take on everything else at least mildly amusing. Follow us on Twitter. Robert Allen is at tech_gaming. I am Sean Nola with two N's. Sage, who is gone, is Samurage. Blue Swim is Blue Swim. And Jeremy Lawman Lamont is Jeremy_Lamont. Don't forget to subscribe to the Tech Gaming Podcast on iTunes. Just click the link in the show notes. If you like what you hear, please rate the show as well, because I think there's only one rating and our old feed is gone, so we can't read all those nice things that everybody else wrote in the past. Also, if you want to keep up to date on the happenings on Tech Gaming, make sure to like us on Facebook, because that's a thing people do these days.
Sean, which way does your browser point?
To Tech Gaming.
Very good answer. See you next week.
Bye. Oh, and like us on Google+, why don't you?
And wish me a happy birthday in the comments and make me feel relevant.
Oh, how old are you,
Better than Mama.
He's turning 19, remember?
He's legal.
Actually, I'm going to be
legal.
I'm going to be 26.
All right, the big 26.
Hey, thank you very much.
You could rent a car. Actually, I guess you could rent a car last year. Anyway, go rent a car.
Then wreck it. When I'm going to bust this alone with some serious stuff.